Welcome to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth. Now listen, we got a hell of a show lined up. If you like JCVD, this is your episode. JCVD for you neophytes that aren't aware is Jean-Claude Van Damme, acclaimed French actor and split enthusiast. Really flexes his acting chops in tonight's movie, so I'm excited about that. And by flexing his acting chops, I mean slightly changing the pitch of his voice to play two characters that are basically the same person, except one's badass and one's kind of a pussy. So, anyway, that's exciting. We also have a wonderful guest in 98 Rock Zone, Miss Wendy Townsend. We're excited to bring her back on the program. She's been gone for ages. As always, hop on the Apple Podcast, the Stitcher, or whatever platform you listen to us on, and leave us a 5-star review. Costs you nothing at all. Means the world to us. And without further ado, now get strapped in. Crank that volume up to 11 and get ready for Double Impact.
Hello, kiddies. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
You know what? I'll tell you a fun story about Mike Quinlan before we kick this off. But I did Mike Quinlan's show that was under a bridge last week.
It looked great.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was under a bridge. We displaced homeless people so that we could do the show underneath there. Under 395.
Please tell me you said that when you got on stage.
Oh, I did, yes. All I did was just shit on the place that we were at.
I hate to say that when you said bridge, I thought it was the same bridge where one of our relatives actually died from falling off of in Baltimore because he was doing graffiti on it.
Which relative died? I don't even know about this.
That's our relative who's Joel and Candy's adopted son.
Oh, that's how he died, doing graffiti off of a bridge?
He was doing graffiti. Cops tried to get him down. They shined a light on him, and he fell to his death.
Oh my gosh! I didn't know that's how he died.
I asked you if you knew, and you said you knew about it.
I said I knew he died. I didn't know he died doing. He died doing what he loved.
And Joel said he died doing what he loved. Yes.
I look at it like this. First of all, I know he's not a blood relative for one reason. The Woodworths are not a natural climbers. We're not gravity in general. Not our greatest. One of our greatest enemies is gravity, and we don't play with our greatest enemies. I'll tell you that much. So, but
gravity's
no.
A motherfucker.
So I was doing this show with Mike Quinlan, right? It's outside. The acoustics suck ass. There's like 50 people in like a parking lot, and it's just loud. There's cars going over. So I did a shit on this. The owner comes up to me after the show, and he goes, "Hey, we're thinking about doing this again. What do you think are some suggestions?" And I looked him dead in the eye. I was like, "Never do this again. This is a fucking horrible idea." And he went, "You comedian." But I was serious. Never do this again, ever.
you funny people.
Oh, hey, can I sweeten the deal? On top of that, and being in the middle of the city and the sound sucks and it's outside and you're just lit by 175-watt floodlights that are underneath a bridge, on top of that, you also get bitten up by gnats the entire time for the show. So it's just one on top of the other.
Yeah, after the show is when you came to Jimmy's, right? For my birthday, Eric?
I had to yell at my wife real quick. She was she was yelling down at me, so I muted myself to have a conversation with her.
I was like, got my phone too.
Son of a batch.
She was asking whether you went to Jimmy's after that.
Yeah, that's when you came to Jimmy's, right?
Yeah, I went to Jimmy's right after that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming out. Sorry I was crying like a bitch.
Hey, can I be honest with you? when I went in there, I was like, I'm going to see if I could cheer her up. And when I realized after the first minute that that was not going to happen, I looked for an exit. And then I kept looking over at Tommy Simbazo. I'm like, come on, help me out over here. And he was like, nope, you made this bed. Now you lie in it. So I sat there. until it was over.
So how good was the sex, like Harry Met Sally?
Yeah, I mean, that was 30 seconds. The crying was the next half hour.
Yeah.
And that was by
me.
You
went the long run.
That was by me. So
I know I told you this before. But it was literally like my birthday week. My car got towed. I paid $265 to get out of the lot. I hadn't had it in my possession for more than an hour before somebody hits it, parked on the street. Then I come home and my entire ceiling had collapsed in my bedroom. And then the hot water heater wasn't working. I had to take a cold shower before the show. I mean, it was like an entire 48 hours of just pure nightmare. And I cracked. I just cracked.
I will say, hey, I was trying to cheer Wendy up, right? And I did. I was like, oh, I'll lighten the mood with a joke. And I said something along the lines of, I was like, hey, you know what? When you finally get that cancer diagnosis at the end of the month, this is all going to seem like small potatoes. And you were not fucking happy when I said that. you were very upset with me when I said that. And I remember looking at, I think it was like Laura and your other friend, whose name I forget. I don't remember your other friend's name.
Krista.
Okay, that I will remember it this time. I've met her like four times now. But they both looked at me like, we can't laugh at this, but it was kind of funny. But they were like, we're going to support our friend, you monster.
You monster.
So that was fun.
I know. I'm like, look, I do feel bad, but I was like so broken and in my feels that it's like, if you were doing that under any other circumstance, I would have thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. It's okay. Hey, listen, you miss 100% of the shots you'd never take. So I went for it.
Okay, well, let's talk about that for a second. I get this like famous quote, right? Wayne Gretzky, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So everybody's like, oh, shoot your shot, shoot your shot, shoot your shot. Everybody does that. And I wish people would stop doing that. I have literally like now I have men in my life that I work with and that I'm around all the time. One of my producers at work shot a shot, and now it's fucking weird, and the dynamic has changed, and now I can't even look him in the eye. So people need to stop fucking shooting their shot. If you know anything about me as a human being, you'll fucking know if I like you. I can't stand the shooting your shot method of people living their lives. It's driving me nuts.
It also goes back to that. I'll quote the philosopher Jack Black, okay? Jack Black at one time said, hey, we want you to go out, find your passion, do what you do, and then after 1 year we will revisit, and then we will tell you to stop. And when I tell you to stop, I fucking mean it, because some people got it and some people don't.
That's fucking smart. Yeah,
that is.
Penalties will be enforced.
Yes, penalties will be created and they will be enforced.
We should really go to a lot of comics and let them know, like, time is up. Either got it or you don't.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll listen to Tom Myers any day because I feel better about myself.
Tom Myers got it. He has literally learned how to bank on being a bad comic. Yes. He's actually smarter than the rest of us.
He is. That guy is living my dream right now. And that is, and that's
he's a dick the whole time and people love it.
Yeah. Imagine not having to write good jokes and crushing. That's all I've ever wanted to do.
Fucking promotional, like, merchandise. Like, God, like, come on.
Well, I don't know. Hey, let's start off the show. Welcome to Quality Time, everybody. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth.
Hey, hey.
I'm first joined by my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. How are you, sir?
I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who's joining us on the program today?
I decided to join your show. This is me, Jeffrey Lewis.
Oh, it's Jeffrey Lewis. The very famous Jeffrey Lewis. This is the third or fourth movie that we've done that Jeffrey Lewis has made a cameo in. Most recently, the Feast episode.
Yeah, that's right. I love firing guns, and I love the NRA.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I'm also joined by our co-host, Miss Ashley Pontius. Ashley, how are you doing, love?
Hi, Daddy. I'm good.
Well, let's see if Ashley's internet cooperates with us for the entire show. But
did she call you Daddy?
Oh, yeah. I call Eric Daddy all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's uncomfortable.
That's very odd. I was very caught off guard by that.
That's okay. I tell Eric that I call Almond Daddy because at some point I'm just going to ask you for money and repay you with disappointment.
Well, how does your wife feel about that? Or would she just not listen?
Oh, she loves it. She's never listened to an episode of this show, so don't worry. But no, my wife loves Ashley because Ashley sent us an anniversary card on our anniversary that came in, and she was like,
"Ashley's good with the cards. She's very good with the cards. She always is. Thoughtful."
And that other voice that you hear is the sultry sounds of 98 Rock Zone. Miss Wendy Townsend, our special guest. How are you, love?
Hello. Good day. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you.
You know who I prefer? I prefer the Wendy Townsend of WCBM.
Yeah, WCBM's Wendy Townsend. I don't know what that is.
It almost makes me want to write a song about it.
The only other station I worked for was WCEI in Easton.
Oh, straight out of Easton. Look at you. Jeremy wrote you a special intro song, Wendy. I'm going to play a little bit of it.
Here. I'm shocked by this.
Here you go. Here's a little bit of Jeremy's song here.
Ever since the first time I heard her that day, Wendy Townsend on WCBM, the sexiest voice I ever heard on talk radio. I knew exactly what I had to do, yeah. I had to polish my gun.
Okay, that's enough, Jeremy. This is ridiculous that you would treat a guest.
I think polishing the gun on something else.
Yeah.
I think she's on to what the song's joke is.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
I love that it only took 5 minutes for this to devolve. Hey, so we're Wendy, getting better.
I'm not lying. That there's 2.5 minutes of that song. So that was the highlight of it.
Just want to send me a link and I'll listen to it personally, half naked.
Yes! Yeah! Winning! Winning!
Get your shot.
I hate to say, I got the backstory from sources that said how Wendy thought everybody on WBCM was into guns. I was like, there's a song.
First of all, where and how do you know anybody from sources? It's a place that's not even open anymore. And then you literally know this tiny piece of information. Like, how?
Because Eric told me.
Looking through your trash. A, I'm not the source of all information. And no, I don't even remember giving you this. This is information that you're giving to me right now, Jeremy.
It's like your cousin's death. He didn't know that either.
Yeah. Jeremy thinks I know things, but really they're the voices in his own head telling him these things. And he just takes it as, facts.
Look, it's perfectly fine what you say about people, and I just like to make jokes about it. So
that's fair enough.
This is awkward.
It's not gonna hurt your career. You know you can be as opinionated as you want.
My career?
Right.
No, I'm not allowed to be opinionated at all.
Yeah.
You will never know my religious beliefs or my political affiliation. Like, I am fucking Switzerland on the air.
Yeah. We live.
Between Mickey and the other one that we used to be, I forgot her name because I'm an idiot. But they got political all the time on the radio. So
yeah, and like, how did that work out? Every firefighter in town hated Mickey, and every fucking pit bull owner hated him. I mean,
that is true. He's
yeah.
Not
you
big
don't want to alienate your audience. You really, I mean, when you make an agenda or have an opinion, you're literally cutting your audience in half.
Right.
You're right. The minute that Jeremy stops being into pedophiles, we have a problem.
Yeah. We're going to lose our base.
I'm going to have to live up time after this fucking whole, like, save our children movement.
When I'm not going to be welcome at the NAMBLA meetings, I'm going to be so unhappy.
You gotta love it. So Wendy, you picked tonight's movie, a 1991 classic. I'll say classic, Double Impact, JCVD. What made you pick Jean-Claude Van Damme for us here
today? Well, let me give you my thought process. You say, are you familiar with any Steven Seagal movies? And I was like, yeah, but I prefer Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Well,
because he's a fucking smoke show, and I was obsessed with him growing up, and I just wanted to literally lick the sweat off of his split-taking body.
Yeah, he is a handsome French man, I will tell you that. The fact that he could do now this, it, ladies on the podcast here, I'll pose this question for you: is a guy doing a split? Is that a turn on if a guy can do a split? I mean, I'm just curious. I don't know if that's the case.
No, it is to me.
Yeah, like I mean, I'm not gonna lie. It kind of gets me aroused when I see a JCV do that. I don't know if that's like, I don't know if it does it for you ladies though.
God.
Oh no, I was just going to say, to be honest, like you're right, Wendy, he has a rocking body. Like it is worth looking at.
Eyes and like, so
right.
All just.
But that's more interesting to me than when he can like do the split. If I had to pick, I'd probably rather watch like Eric's disgusting titty show than watch that dude.
Thank you.
Watch that dude move his cheek. Like,
well, I think
as you, Eric, what's the name of that movie he's in where he like jumps on the counter doing the split to like get away from a bullet?
That would be Time Cop. Yeah, not that I know.
That's not hot. Where he's just like fucking jumping up and splitting his legs like a boy getting killed.
Well, that's cooler than what he does in this movie.
Well, I look at it. Here's to me. So like when I see, for instance, a lady do a split, right? I look at that. I'm like, I could.
Every time you saw that, buddy.
Huh?
Every
time I watch that WAP video, it happens. Every time I see that wet ass P word video, she's
that my manager at Outback keeps saying WAP, and I'm like, that's actually derogatory. I can't have you.
Yeah. I personally love wet ass Dago. That's my preferred.
That has been on repeat every day. I'm like, make me choke.
No,
put
but
that
like
dangly thing in the back of my throat.
When I see a lady do a split, I think I'm like, yeah, that'd be a cool thing to have sex with. But like, I don't see how like when a guy does a split and a lady sees it, I'm like, first of all, Jean-Claude Van Damme, he ain't fucking from that position. You understand? Like, he has no base under him. It just exists. That's it.
I just want to speak up for Lance Booty Johnson from jail, who if he sees that scene with Jean-Claude, probably his head explodes.
That's it. I like booty. I like Jean-Claude Van Damme's booty.
It's like air.
Okay, Jeremy. I live for a good reference like that, and you got me on that one. You got me.
Everybody loves booty.
So, I don't know if I see the allure of it, but you know, hey, a couple of quick things about this movie. I got a quote from Jean-Claude Van Damme about this movie, Double Impact. Okay. So Van Damme said that he wanted to play twins to help change his image. Okay. So this movie, Double Impact, was to change his image. One of them is violent and the other is not. So the audience can see a contrast in my work, he said. This picture is comedy, romance, a love story. So it's not just all action and fighting. When I'm on the screen, I blend dancing, fighting, grace, power. It's very nice.
You made him sound like Borat.
It is very nice. I'm Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Dancing, and there is comedy. You have to be like more French.
he's kind of a blend between Borat and what's his face from The Room. Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark. It's me, Jean-Claude Van Damme. So this movie is also directed by Sheldon Lidditch. So his other two famous movies are Lionheart, another Jean-Claude Van Damme property, and also the writer writer and director of Rambo 3, making Rambo 3 the trilogy here. So lots of things that this guy, I mean, listen, give it up for Sheldon. He's produced some of the best B-level action films in all of history.
Sheldon.
Oh, Sheldon. And then he's also co-producing Young Sheldon, which is actually, you'd think it was from Big Bang Theory, but it's actually loosely based on his own childhood.
Bazinga!
So
I actually wrote notes as I was watching the movie,
Oh, yeah, you were texting me, and we were watching the movie technically at, the same time.
We were watching together. We had, a little movie date.
We had it.
So I had a real date with a human being. Last night, and I didn't finish Double Impact before we went out. And when we came home, I was like, "Do you mind if I finish the rest of this Jean-Claude Van Damme movie? Mm-hmm. I have a podcast tomorrow." And he goes, "I'm sorry, what?" And I was like, "I'm on a podcast tomorrow where we're discussing this movie, and I have 40 more minutes left. Do you mind?" So we're watching it, and it's I'm laughing at all the cheese ball moments where it's obviously a green screen and they're not even looking at each other's eyes because they're really not twins at all. And
what?
What?
Wait a minute.
Why don't you just tell me wrestling isn't real now?
Right. So when we were talking, I was like, oh, something happened. And I was like, oh, that reminds me of Die Hard. And he goes, I've never seen Die Hard. And I was like,
Did you remove him from your life? Did you remove him from your life right there or no?
Dude, he's 36 years old. And I was like, you've never seen Die Hard? Well, we're ordering a pizza because you've got 2 hours of fucking time that I'm going to take from you.
Because you haven't seen the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
I said that. I said literally every guy on this earth thinks this is the best Christmas movie when it just happens to be a Christmas party, not even on Christmas Day or whatever. Mm. So, yeah, I made him watch Die Hard.
Personally, I think Gremlins is the greatest Christmas movie, but that's just me.
That's a good one. I personally like Jingle All the Way because Arnold Schwarzenegger is just a more steroided up version of Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's like, put the cookie down now.
Come on, it's me, Turbo Man. You got to get in here. Do this bullshit.
Jeremy, come back.
Come on.
Did you ever watch Conan O'Brien?
Say that again?
Did you ever watch Conan O'Brien?
Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
He constantly, always had the Arnold face come down. He's like, yeah, this is my new movie. It's all the day.
Come on, Maria.
He would have people do the lips with the faces.
I love that. The guy who did all those impressions was great. I also love the Bill Clinton one because he's like, hey, yeah. There was one Conan O'Brien skit where he's like, he came down as Bill Clinton. He was just like, hey, you know, Conan, you know, hey, I went to Mexico. You know, they say the X like a he. And I went up to this lady. I say, may I have say he with you?
I am so obsessed with Conan O'Brien. I've seen him live 6 times. I've been in New York 5 and then once in Burbank, California. And I legit was my first tattoo was going to be the cartoon head of Conan O'Brien. That's
oh
how
my gosh.
Every night. I watched it literally every night. My dad fucking knew I was obsessed. I would leave my friends out at a bar and I was like, no, I got to go. Conan's on after Jay Leno. I gotta get out of here.
Yeah. The weirdest part is hanging out with Wendy in at New Year's Eve, 1999 into 2000. And instead of a really cool song, she insisted that we just play the drop in the year 2000.
Be like, I know you want to get in my pants, but the masturbating bear is on.
He's got a Google room. He's very busy.
I really liked Conan the Destroyer, but Conan the Barbarian was also pretty good.
Yes.
Oh, God, Jeremy. My favorite was the string dance, and he was like, and he would hit the string, and his hip would fall down. You know, whatever, we can do this little day. I've had 20 years of Conan in my arsenal.
Red Sonja was also pretty good.
Yeah, there you go. I like.
But he wasn't really Conan in that.
Jeremy's not going to go with the bit, and I like it. And I don't you ever change. So hey, listen.
Did Jeremy ever go with the bit?
No, he doesn't. He just waits to talk.
Well, were we talking about Jingle All the Way again?
Yes. So all right. So this movie, Double Impact, starts off. It's we're at Victoria. Harbor Tunnel. It opens up in Hong Kong, where we meet Frank, played by Jeffrey Lewis, who's Jeremy's playing, but has now stepped away from his microphone. And he's playing Paul Wagner's bodyguard. They just opened this big old tunnel with Mr. Griffith, but we find out in this opening scene that Mr. Griffith has set up Paul and his wife to be murdered along with his two twin boys, because when they show up to the house, Moon, who's played by Bolo Yang, is waiting there to do some murdering. Now, Bolo Yang, if you remember from our another previous episode, was in the movie Bloodsport and is also one of Jean-Claude Van Damme's best friends in the whole world. He's the really jacked Asian dude in this movie.
The one with the eye and the scar, right?
Yeah. He's also the main bad guy in Bloodsport, and he said Jean-Claude Van Damme is trying to get him into the next installment of The Expendables because he's always wanted to be a good guy with Bolo Yang. So, very good. Aww. They're very good friends. And basically, shotguns start blasting left and right. Mom gets kind of jacked up, and Bolo Yang comes over to go say this to her.
My babies! What'll happen to them?
You never know.
Oh, it just shoots the mom right in the fucking face in the chops.
Right in the face.
Frank and the maid, basically, the bodyguard and the maid in the back, each take one of the young children and they split them up at birth.
They run separately.
Yeah.
Right? They don't go together. They're like, you get a baby, I get a baby. We'll figure it out.
And I love how, so the maid drops him off at an orphanage in Hong Kong, which happens to be a French orphanage. A French orphanage in Hong Kong, to explain why Jean-Claude Van Damme is going to grow up and have a French accent. And then
yeah. He's like singing La Kinika Nika.
Yes. And they also establish that Frank goes and moves to France to get away to raise the other Jean-Claude Van Damme. I just love it.
Explaining both their accents.
I love that they're like, we can't have any plot holes here to explain how shittily he talks.
No, Fred, man, there's two plot holes, minus the screen where they are looking at each other in the same scene, but they're really not.
You know where we should go to avoid extradition? France.
So it still
doesn't explain how the young Patrick Stewarts grow up and they move to France, but they still sound like they're British when they grow up.
They're like, oh, no plot holes. Here's a French orphanage. They just happen to have like the same exact workout regimen.
Yes.
Muscle mass in the same parts of their body.
Hey,
you obviously do leg and ass day on the same days that I do.
I like that they cut their hair the exact same length, but one chooses to slick it back. That's the only difference in what they do.
And one's got 5 o'clock shadow.
What I like, the other one is Chad.
Yes.
And he's the one that's like in California with the plaid and the part where like the fucking pastel like polos and shit. Like, he's definitely a Chad.
So we go 20 years into the future, and boys and girls, we're in 1991. And Chad is teaching a class where he's stretching out this girl.
I'm so sorry.
You see this girl's pussy in the first minute of this movie. It's just a very close-up shot of this girl's pussy.
Doing well. You know, stretching is so important. For example, because of my big legs and karate, I can do the splits no problem.
So he gets his split out of the way in the first 5 minutes of this movie, which is...
It turns out it's actually a class just on working the labia.
Yeah, yes. And he's like wearing like classic 90s spandex, and then his dad, I guess we'll say at this point, Frank, the old bodyguard, says, hey, I need you to take over karate class in your fucking really queer outfit that you're wearing right now. Go over there with these tough karate dudes. And he has to go humble one of the karate students who kicked somebody in the face. He's like, hey, why don't you try that with me, tough guy? And he just immediately establishes that I know how to sidekick people right away. I'm a badass, even though I'm a California Frenchman that also teaches aerobics at this weird Hollywood
and
fitness club.
What does this start in the movie? That starts the roundhouse kick count.
Yes, number one.
Can we talk about the fact, though, that the guy from his class that has beef with him is giving him shit for his outfit? Like, oh, what you doing here, you little fairy?
Yeah.
But that guy is wearing a pink outfit. Yeah.
Yes, he has like a pink gi on. And he's a white, he's like a white belt pink gi guy who literally looks like he just stopped touring with Three Dog Night to learn karate today. Like, it's.
He looks like a badass Axl Rose.
Sugar in your tea.
Oh gosh. I like a pink gi, don't get me wrong, but this guy, like, you can't have a mullet in 91, wear a pink gi, and be like, I'm the new leader of this dojo.
First of all, that guy was scrawny and he looks at Jean-Claude like, you're gonna talk shit to that guy?
Agreed. It made no sense at all.
So Frank talks to Chad, basically talks to Chad and say, hey, we're opening up a new store in Hong Kong. You're coming with. But you can see that Frank's looking at a picture of his twin brother.
We've got business to do.
Yeah, we're expanding the fucking Chad name to worldwide status, right?
Yeah, not just to like fucking Calabasas, all the way to Hong Kong.
Yes. So he goes to Hong Kong with Frank, and then immediately he's getting recognized by people. Like some random Hong Kong guy comes up and just hands him. Yeah.
It's hot, just like you like it.
Yeah, he hands him like a big thing of cash, and he's just like, I got it out, like this, and then he's like, I don't know, but and Chad immediately goes, well, I like money, who knows, like this.
Oh my god.
So he's like, he then meets a pretty lady in red who will be the character Danielle, who brings him into the back and starts getting a little frisky with him. He follows back there.
Keep going.
And then she unzips him, reaches silk down, underwear. Finds his silk underwear, and then he turns around to see his twin brother looking him dead in the eye.
Big surprise. Huge surprise.
And then he gets, oh, he gets headbutted and knocked out by his twin brother, Alex, who is the badass Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I have to be honest, I don't know if I would ever be wet for a man that's like, I'm wearing silk underwear. Nah, I'm pretty good. I use silk for my pillow, but not for my panties. Like, that's disgusting.
I'll let you know, unless your thread count is over 1,000, it can't even touch these balls, okay? That's just how I live my life.
1,000 thread count is like fucking royalty shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, look. At least, like, give me over 300 or 400. I'm not a rich woman.
Where'd you get these Ollies? Like, what is this?
I actually go to like TJ Maxx and Marshalls, and I'm like, ooh, 10 grand for less.
So Frank explains that Alex and Chad are twin brothers. Their parents were murdered, and they're the rightful heirs to the Victoria Harbor Tunnel. I like that this fight is all over the Victoria Harbor Tunnel.
Yeah,
which is literally like I don't know, like if they just said it was a vast like wealth thing, but I like that it revolves around, no, this is your father's tunnel, and you need this as a British person.
Are you sure it's not my mother's tunnel?
Wet ass parkway.
Wouldn't it be great if they made like a Baltimore version and the kids find out you're heir to the harbor tunnel? Like, oh,
oh my God.
Not even the McHenry? It's like 50 years old and it looks like shit.
Yeah, right. You want to be the Fort McHenry tunnel. You don't want to be the harbor tunnel. Oh. Literally, so if you're listening to the radio and you're driving through the harbor tunnel, it cuts into your radio. It's like, one lane passway, one lane, one lane. It literally just like dogs you the whole time. You're like, what? It's literally just, it's like never, not two cars going the same direction. So now that it's like, it literally just like talks to you the whole time. You're like, well, I'm going to listen to my Spotify now.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that in Baltimore knows that the McHenry is the vagina tunnel and the harbor tunnel is the ass tunnel.
a little tighter, a little dirty, a little weaker.
Yeah.
It's like the world's worst game of Monopoly. Be like, oh, I've got
the Harbor Tunnel. Collect $2.
That was actually
highway.
The Harbor Tunnel was actually Ashley's nickname in high school. It was
Oh, that was a cheap. That was a heavy peach.
Sorry.
That was a heavy peach.
I'm sorry. God damn it.
It's okay, Eric. I can't feel anything. Just keep being mean. It's fine.
Another week till suicide. Mechanism.
So
quarantine.
So Alex is a little bit apprehensive to the whole situation, but he looks over at his sweet brother Chad and says,
"These were our parents. Look at them."
I hear all kinds of bullshit every day, pal. You want some advice? Take your fancy clothes and your black silk underwear. And go back to Disneyland.
Go back to Disneyland.
That's it. I guess you and I, Frankie. Like always.
Okay. You want some real action, tough guys?
So he says he wants some real action. So I like his idea of action is he goes and takes them on an illegal contraband sale. Alex, then them head on a boat to basically sell some Mercedes filled with cigarettes and cognac to some other...
And VCR and VCRs in the trunk.
Oh, yeah, there are VCRs as well. You're right. Yeah. He's like, this isn't
this is the best brand name VCR you can buy in 1991.
This isn't that Betamax bullshit. These are real movies.
Video disc? What the fuck?
Alex just turns around with his glass and he's like, oh, you have silk underwear. I wear none.
I wear none. You will smell my dick cheese.
No way. A new video disc with a copy of The Bodyguard? Hello.
So the sale seems to go.
When did The Bodyguard come out?
Yeah.
89, maybe.
No, not 99. It was early 90s. I'd say like 92, 93. Let's see.
Right, so, Jeremy, I'm going to need you to date your references. If The Bodyguard came out after Blitz, or after Double Impact, you can't use it as a reference.
That's never stopped Jeremy ever. But The Bodyguard did come out in 1992, so the year after this. So the sale seems to be going as planned, but all of a sudden, the Hong Kong motherfucking police show up out of nowhere.
This is the Hong Kong Marine Police. They call me Daniel Sosa.
Pull over your vessel immediately. So this immediately starts jump kicks fucking galore from both Alex and Chad. They have to fight off these guys. They end up throwing them off the boat. But the cops are still in hot pursuit behind them. So as they're being chased by the police, they have to, Chad gets the bright idea to jettison both of the Mercedes-Benzes off the back of this boat. And then Frank shoots the gas tanks out in as they're sinking in water to explode them.
Thinking too, by the way.
What I mean, you'd think good thinking, but I mean, it's a giant ocean that they're in. They could, like, I don't understand why the police just go, well, that seems like a minor inconvenience. Let me just simply move the 30 feet to the right and just continue chasing these guys. But it seemed to have worked.
I didn't buy it because I thought that they were diesels anyway.
Yeah, that is true. Diesel wouldn't do that. while they Alex walked away with all the money and things worked out, he wasn't particularly happy that they got rid of the Mercedes-Benz. So they're sitting there to have a nice family talk, and I did pull this little bit of audio. It's only about 7 seconds, but this is Alex and Chad having a little chat while eating ramen noodles here.
Chad, take a bite. Be a man.
What's it supposed to do? Make my dick bigger?
His dick bigger.
Jeremy, you're fucking idiot.
His dick bigger.
Be a man.
Oh gosh.
Really, the only thing a man ever thinks about. Can it get bigger?
He's got the biggest dick ever.
So they find out Alex's girlfriend works for Griffith, the guy who murdered, set up the murder of their own father. Alex is a bit conflicted. On the bright side, though,
That is my woman.
He's like, that is my woman. I cannot betray her. You know, I cannot betray this beautiful, no-ass, big-titted woman at all.
First of all, talk about the tits. I even brought this up to my date last night. I was like, these are not real. They are not moving, and they're very large for her body frame. They are definitely not real. I can't believe that they can't be real.
Fair point.
Probably not. Although, but as far as tit jobs go for the early 90s, I'd say there was a great job that was done
on them.
That's what
I said, too. I said, whoever did this boot job in whatever time frame this was did an amazing job.
I agree. I mean, you're quite right. I have to say, I did walk away for a minute while watching it because I was starting to lose interest. But when I heard this speech, I was like, oh, crap.
So when the girl gets naked and her tits are out, that's when she
over
the
puke.
I just wasn't into it.
When they were getting to it, when there was like a fantasy in his head, like his brother fucking his girlfriend, that's when you walk away. That's when I'm like zooming in. Like,
There's a lot of other movies where I'm just like, oh, like we were talking earlier about the movie Mausoleum, where I'm like, there's demon tits that keeps my attention.
I will say that
will keep me enraptured.
I will say in every sex scene though now, like if there's a celebrity sex scene, I feel like titties are so commonplace, right, that I'm not excited about them. I do look for a random ball and or vag shot. I crave them.
Have you seen 365 Days on Netflix?
No. Is there balls in it though?
Oh my God. It is like a fucking softcore porn.
All right. Hell yeah.
Highly recommend.
There's a movie with another great French actor, Christopher Lambert of Highlander fame, where there's like a part of the movie where he's having a sex scene and she's riding him, and they have one shot where you can actually see Christopher Lambert's balls, and that's
it was shit.
Yeah, that's why. And I only know about this scene because Nick Mullen of Cumtown fame actually posted the still cap of Christopher Lambert's balls in this movie, and that's why that was the last straw for Facebook and him, and that's how he got removed because of Christopher Lambert's balls. So
I wouldn't say it's as good as Sid Haig's balls when riding him in Devil's Rejects.
You do get to see a quick ball shot of him. You know what? We should start our own website. It's called Male Balls in Movies, and that's all we do is just catalog every male ball shot.
Oh my God, no. Let's call it Ball Hog. I just sit there and I'm like, I've compiled the best ball shots in cinema.
So while this is all going down and he can't, he goes and Alex follows his girlfriend. to check on her and the situation. While that's happening, Chad gets abducted by Mr. Zhang, who is like the head crime boss there in Hong Kong, because he thinks that he's Alex. They put him in the car and then take him to an undisclosed little shipping yard where he gets to go face to face with Moon, the really jacked Chinese guy. And they basically, Mr. Zhang offers him a proposal. He says, hey, you could start moving cocaine for me. It's a lot more money. And you like money, don't you? And then Chad says, no, go fuck it. Well, I'll give him your exact words. Here's his answer to Mr. Zhang.
You go fuck yourself.
There you go. So now it immediately starts.
Can we address the fact that he drives him there with the cigar box that his parents were killed?
Yes, I noticed that too.
And supposedly Jean-Claude recognizes this, although he was only a year old at the time.
Not even a year old. He was a baby.
He was an infant.
6 months old.
And he was like, that is my father's lighter, I can tell.
I remember the smell of cigarettes and cigars and cheap French liquor.
My English father did not raise me to be a good Frenchman and not realize the smell of a cigar.
It's kind of like Princess Leia remembering her mother, even though she only saw her for like a minute before she died. And Luke can't remember. Oh, that's right, because he was just born. Okay?
Dylan.
Like, really?
I like that because that's the only death by sadness that I know of.
His acting killed me.
So this immediately sparks a karate fight, and he handles the first couple of goons, but then Moon goes and takes the one guy that he beats up and just snaps his own guy's neck because he does that, and then Moon comes over and gives him a fucking palm fist to the groin, which, if you remember, if we go back to Bloodsport, that is the move that actually beat him in Bloodsport, was a fucking kick to the groin. So
very ironic.
Yeah, they really bring it back, and then just slams his head into a fucking sea container like 15 times and basically incapacitates young Chad. He goes back home though and tells Frank all about what happened.
I could have taken them, except that big Chinese ugly motherfucker with a big scar on his cheek.
And of course Frank tells him, oh yeah, P.S. that it big ugly Chinese motherfucker, that's the guy that killed both of your parents before my very eyes. So the boys
got shot in the face.
Yeah, so the boys are now all in to go take down Zhang and Griffith and get back their birthright, which is that fucking tunnel that is in their name,
the Harbor Tunnel.
So
remember when he was like, oh, we're expanding to Hong Kong, or and then he was like, no, this is your brother. You have a twin brother. And he was like, okay. He just handled it so nonchalantly.
Yes.
I was going to bring that up. I agree. I was watching that whole scene, and it just falls apart so fast. And I'm thinking, man, the emotional scene that these actors are giving really put Daniel Day-Lewis to shame. Like,
So much better than There Will Be Blood.
Yes. Yeah, like,
yeah, The Revenant, fuck that shit. Like
what's stopping Frank?
Like, we have a twin brother. This is your reaction. Just like, we got business here.
Can I say the I'm sorry. I didn't want to walk over your I thought you were done. I would have really loved to have written some dialogue when he finds out that he owns a tunnel. He's like, wow, 25 years worth of tolls that could have been mine.
I would have loved to write a scene in this movie where he just sees his brother for the first time. He's like, I don't see the resemblance. That would have been good.
But she makes such a good point, though. Wendy makes such a good point. Like, that whole scene is absolute garbage when they do the reveal of all of these family secrets. And then Frank has the nerve to go, you trust me, right? You know I'd never lie to you. And I'm like, you've been lying to him his whole life. I'm not sure.
Literally, my
Uncle Frank.
There hasn't been a moment where you haven't lied to me. This is, you're doing nothing but
25 years.
I know I haven't lied to you in the last 30 seconds, but do you trust me?
It's worse than when Arthur finds out that, like, oh, you're making me a squire, but my dad used to be the king, you dick.
Yeah, classic sword in the stone.
Gosh.
So,
that's a good one. Quick question.
Yeah.
Sorry, quick question.
Shoot.
Between the two, I want you guys to pick who's worse, this Uncle Frank or Uncle Frank from Hellraiser?
Oh, Uncle Frank from Hellraiser, hands down. Yeah, I give it to Uncle Frank.
Uncle Frank will rape anybody. So.
Yeah, he's a...
Funny when Ashley brings that up, because the last time I was on this podcast, Hellraiser was the movie that we did.
That was it. That was it. Yeah. That was Wendy's last appearance on this show.
And so, I don't know which is worse, being raped or being raped by somebody without any skin.
Yeah. Ugh. It's like, put some skin in the game, pal. You know what I mean? You
like,
know?
Not even like, you know, uncircumcised. We're talking completely uncircumcised.
What's going on?
Flesh. It's bald, no skin. Just innards.
Can I say, God, the moil got out of control? So there is a little brief scene where Danielle is trying to poke around the offices of Griffith, but you get to meet Kara, who is his security guard, who is a sexy lady with strong legs. This bit,
she looks like fucking, I literally was like, who's this China looking bitch?
Yeah, she's.
All I could think of was the Flavor Flav roast. I just want to rip her open and climb inside of her like a tauntaun carcass.
And she basically sexually assaults Danielle in the thing. Like, there's a little sexual assault that happens right there.
Little.
Yeah.
It's like, the woman was like, no, I'm going to fucking just put my hands all in you.
All I could think of was the guard at Super Jail.
Oh, Josh, yeah. I like it. It's, hey, are you smuggling staplers in your pussy out of here? Let me go check this out real quick. And sure enough, stapler free. Way to go, Kara. You're a real champion of the office. So they then go set up their derelict home base because apparently they just can't stay in this shitty place that Alex works. It's covered with bird shit and basically looks like 2010 Brian Preston's apartment was the notes that I wrote here.
2020 also.
Yes. So they decide to make plans to intercept the drug drop that now Chad knows about on Thursday night in the bay. So they load up a small arsenal of fucking machine guns and all types of shit to take down these bastards. They kill about a dozen guys. In this scene where they go to like take them down, there's so much double gun shooting by Alex. Like every type of cliche that you could see with a guy using two guns. He rolls around on the ground. He goes up and down. He never thinks to ever shoot under tables, the bad guys or other. It's very fun to watch this. And then we also learned that Chad can barely use a gun, but does machine gun one person in this whole scene. But they end up blowing the whole place up and leave pretty much unscathed. So
was Bruce Willis the first to do the rolling double gun on Die Hard?
That's a good question, Jeremy. I don't know the answer, but we should find that out as a movie central podcast.
At what point in this movie did everyone realize that this is a complete amalgam that could have been made up in a cheap VIC-20 computer of Die Hard and Lethal Weapon?
I remember that's why I brought up Die Hard. I was like, this reminds me of Die Hard.
But I'm like, okay. Oh, let's also go to like a shipping yard, which is almost exactly like Lethal Weapon 2 with an Englishman who claims to have diplomatic immunity.
Ah, good point.
And is also,
really good, Jeremy.
And is also the guy who tries to kill Bill and Ted from all of history. So.
I understand your references. I know Wendy and Ashley could not be drier by that comment that you made, but
hey, I know how to displease women.
I got it. So
warm, arid pussy.
I know how to make them dry.
Dap, everybody, dap.
I'm like a brand new loofah that's never been used.
You're not even like the cool like Nick kind. You're like the really hard, dry kind from like a Crate and Barrel that like needs to get super wet to even be functioning.
Yeah,
like it's been that got stuck in the toilet in a Long King Polly. That kind of loop.
So
she gets me.
So the boys get back and they decide the next thing they're going to do is Danielle gives them information that Mr. Griffith is going to go to Zhang's nightclub where there's going to be a meeting. So this would be a good time to attack Zhang and Griffith at the same time. So
get him a box of RSVP.
Yeah, so Zhang did mention that he would love some cognac after beating the shit out of Chad earlier. So they decide to bring him some cognac. Now they're both hair slicked back to look like Alex in this scene. And they start walking around with these VSOPs that are basically loaded with clearly bombs. Like, there's no way this isn't a bomb. Like, this, anyway. So the goons bring one into the office, but Chad is still walking around with his other bomb. Like, he doesn't know where he's doing. He doesn't know what's going on. Mr. Zhang hears about that. He's out there. He's like, you know what? I'd like to speak with him. He brings Chad back in and they say they want to see you right away, but he's still holding the other bomb. And his dad signals him to say, hey, get down real quick. I'm going to go blow this shit up. And he does that. The bodyguard laughs at him. He's like, what are you doing? It's not like there's a bomb. Oh, shit! And he immediately blows it. Starts a karate fight. We see a lot of whiskey bottle foo right here, which is a style little known where you only fight with whiskey bottles. Overall, it's a pretty fun scene. A couple people get jump kicked. There's glass that gets broken. But the important part is that the main bad guys, Mr. Griffith and Mr. Zhang, they see that there's now two of them and they're just fucking blown away that there could even possibly be two Alexes in this whole fucking world.
Can I say that I did bottle fights in the film that I did with my buddy, and it was fine because you don't feel it, and they're pretty much fall apart almost if you're rough with them, except the director decided to make a bottle lamp to smash on my buddy's head, which had a nice piece of wood in it, which of course the wood smashed into his head and almost brought blood out of while we were on the
set. So, hell
didn't
yeah.
feel that lamp part breaking except for the piece of wood that really hurt his head. So.
Oh, the fun of film, Jeremy. The fun of film.
My boyfriend's treatment the same.
They keep smashing your head, but you're still conscious. Is like, stop smashing me on the head when you're trying to. No, sorry, a little too.
I'm like, it's just for fun.
I'm not. You're not gonna make me unconscious, fucker.
It's not real. You don't really hate me. You do it because you love me.
Like, I thought smacking me in the head with wood was like a whole different thing, but okay.
And as a woman, you think to yourself, another bad date.
Another bad date.
Go ahead? I'm going to interject. My favorite part is that Jeremy goes, well, as a woman, like, you have any kind of insight. Like, any fucking, like, what's, oh, this is just this another is, bad date.
As a strong woman, Jeremy would like to comment on
that. I like to think of myself as a feminist.
This is just another bad date.
Wendy, I wish you would have been here the day it was just me and Jeremy, and he goes, wow, your hair is down. I've never seen your hair down. You look feminine.
Sorry, somebody cold. What you said? What did you say, Ashley? Your hair is down.
Oh, sorry. No, you're good. He said, wow, your hair is down. I've never seen your hair down. You look feminine. And I was like, fantastic.
You look feminine.
I believe I tried to say something nice that was like, you look very ladylike today.
No, it was exactly how she said it. Don't worry.
Like, oh, okay.
No,
go ahead.
When girls are like pixie cut. And like short hair, like, are you just like, ugh, God, is that even a woman?
Yeah. Yeah. He actually, until like recently, he thought the chick at the end of Ghostbusters was a man up until like a year ago.
He's like looking at Demi Moore and Ghost, and he's like, Patrick Swayze, I didn't know he was gay.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what, we could really confuse him on an episode. If I cut my hair short and wear a tank top, you can't tell me and Eric apart.
Yes, there's not. It's true. Which one's the real Eric?
There's a little in the mix, and he thinks he's talking to his brother.
Yeah, they both we call got that big chick 5 o'clock shadow.
Like, we call that non-binary Eric.
So the next day, Danielle goes in, finds a document that proves that Alex and I guess Alex and Chad are the rightful heirs to this fucking tunnel, and she goes to make a call to go call Alex at the secret hideout, but Chad picks up and says Alex is out in the jungle somewhere, and he says she's like, yeah, well, I found this, but I think they're onto us, and they certainly are, because they're actually just listening, because this is how phones worked in 1990. If you just pick up, you can listen to whoever's on the thing. She easily gets caught, but now Chad says, go to Alex's, I will pick you up there. And so Chad takes the boat and goes to go pick him up at the shop. Now Alex gets back and he thinks that Chad is off fucking his lady and just grabbing his boat and taking dips into the Danielle Ocean every day. So just as the bad guys burst in to capture Chad and Danielle, they start making a run for it, and luckily Side kicks a door open. It's funny, she like struggling with the door, she's like, don't worry, let me handle this, yeah, like that, immediately Side kicks it open, and they're able to escape with the same thing that Jean-Claude Van Damme escapes with in Bloodsport, which is running across a bunch of boats in a Hong Kong harbor. Again, he's just like, we gotta go, the only way to lose people is you gotta jump across boats, that's just what you have to do to get away in Hong Kong. There's no other choice.
Was it cheaper to make movies in Hong Kong back then, or like, why?
I just
we're not allowed to be like a bad guy in America.
They're just it was more fun for Jean-Claude Van Damme to do karate there. I think that's the only explanation for it. So they take off on their boat and the bad guys are following, but this time in a helicopter, and Chad stupidly leads them right to their secret hideout, which is the bird shit covered derelict hotel that they're living on in the middle of a fucking island. And meanwhile, Alex is just getting fucking hammered the whole day thinking about Chad banging his lady. So there's a nice softcore pornographic scene where you get to see sweet Danielle's titties. You get the patented ass shot of Jean-Claude Van Damme, which he wrote into most of his movies. That was a requirement for him to show his sweaty butt at least once a film. And I don't know. There's some fine titties, I guess. I guess. I don't understand how he's like having this fantasy and seeing his twin brother fuck him. It's just like, he doesn't imagine that's him at all. Like, this is like, it just
that. So you like, I realized it was a, you know, he was like envisioning it, but at the same time I was like, oh, is this like where you get that twin fucking sixth sense, you know? And you're like, you know, maybe he is fucking her and he can like feel that he's fucking his girl.
Yeah. I know with my twin.
Oh, he's not really doing it.
Like, but Danielle bursts in and he's just like, I know every time my brother nuts because I also nut. we've been synced up for years.
Did anybody actually see the Corsican Brothers?
I don't even know what that is. I didn't understand four of the words in that sentence.
I don't know if it was a book at one time, maybe like in the old days when books were written, but apparently the director was somebody came to him to try to make it. But who actually made the movie The Corsican Brothers about two twin brothers that feel what each other feel? It became a Cheech and Chong movie.
Oh.
When Cheech and Chong is the Corsican brother, and making fun of how brothers like, oh, he's getting sex in one place and the other brother feels it, and bullshit like that. So it's a total joke movie, whereas this movie is almost trying to be realistic. So
I can attest that Jeremy, being my brother, we have that same connection, and neither of us have nutted in 2 years. So that's a fun story. So
I did have a nightmare, though, that if you changed this to a different movie, if you did Twins with Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I was thinking about that. Mm-hmm.
And Arnold's like, yeah.
Twin references are going to be made from this
so
movie.
He's like, yeah, I'm big that dick, and Danny DeVito's like, oh, I feel it. Like,
so my favorite part of Twins is when they're like, we've created this magnificent specimen. And then there's Danny DeVito and he goes, sir, tell me I'm all the crap left over.
people say that's
favorite part where he's like, let me get this. He gets all the looks, the height. He's so smart. And I'm just like all the crap that's left over.
Yeah, I fully understand that movie. My older sister was a swimsuit model, and I failed college 3 times.
So. Well, I know which sister I choose.
Yeah, my
you, baby. Yes.
I have an older sister, and she is like the polar opposite of me. Like, she's shorter. She's older than me. She's shorter than me. She has red hair, brown eyes, freckles. She's a bulldog lesbian, wears men's clothes. She's on her second wife, and she's so sensitive. And then there's me. I'm like, I don't offend. I know we are literally like the polar opposite human beings.
Wow.
It's kind of adorable.
You know what's funny is, so she lives in Salisbury, and this is just a quick side note. So I had a show in Salisbury at Rhodey Joe's, and she shows up with her wife. They're like front and center. I didn't even know they were coming. And I go, Stefan, let me meet my sister, Nancy. And he goes, you have a sister? Like, right? And I'm like, okay, well, she's right here. At least pretend that I talk about her at some point. Just make her feel good.
Be like, can't you see the resemblance? We are total.
And I was like, well, she's right here. I just need you to
please
lock it up for the
I'd like you to meet my sister, Danielle DeVito. She's very she's lovely.
You're gonna come live with me now, Chunk.
I didn't know you had a twin sister, Wendy.
Yeah, we're twins by 2.5 years. I was just stuck in the womb for a long time.
Some
gestations take longer than others.
Yeah, me and Jerry's twins, we were 12 years apart. I just didn't want to leave. I came out 27 pounds at birth.
Right. You're already toddler size.
Yes. I knew how to play pinochle out of the womb.
Right. You're like, I don't know the ABCs. You don't even need to fucking teach me.
He also came out with a small television and a Nintendo.
Yes, that is true. So Alex immediately confronts Chad when he shows up because he thinks he's been fucking his girl. Here we go.
Because he looks like me, I'm going to change that. Because I'm going to fuck up his face.
Frank!
So I made a supercut of just the screaming sounds that they do, which is basically Jean-Claude Van Damme screaming over top of Jean-Claude Van Damme, and here we go.
Chad, Alex! Hey, you guys out of your mind?
Stop that!
So Frank has to shoot a gun to get them to stop fighting. And listen, Alex and Chad, they're still not happy with each other. Alex turns to Chad and says,
"You're drunk. Maybe I'm drunk. Tomorrow I'll be sober. But he'll always be a faggot."
So there's that. Yes. So he drops that.
I would have heard that.
He then appears. The gang is all broken up. Chad says, "I'm going back to LA. I'll swim." And Frank goes, "Wait, come on, come back." He's like, "I'll swim to fucking LA." So he ends up just sleeping in the jungle. Alex wakes up on the beach the next morning to see that the place is getting overrun by bad dudes with machine guns because the bad guys are up here to collect for Alex and Chad. So they go up and start opening fire on the place, but Frank and Danny are there in there just trying to duck for cover. They end up capturing Danielle and Frank and whisking them away to another location. Meanwhile, the brothers that are stuck there, they start making way around the fucking island, knocking these guys off Rambo 3 style, one by one. Just jump kicks and guns. That's all that happens for the next like 5 or 6 minutes, and sneaking around even though they are two giant Frenchmen. So they then go to Griffith and Zhang then are back at the place, and they're torturing Frank, and they want him to talk. And I don't understand what the fuck they want Frank to say, and what information is Frank holding back? What is he holding back that he's being tortured during this scene? He's just like, "I can't let them know they're the rightful heirs." Like, they clearly know that all of the shit that's happening right now. Do you think it was some other random twin brothers that are also raised like this, like that would be doing this? Why is he being tortured? I don't understand. But the boys infiltrate this base by Chad acting like he's captured, and the other guy, Alex, is actually standing behind him in a guard's uniform, so they easily dispatch the first two goons at this dock. The boys quickly make their ways to the bowels of this giant factory, and they aren't quiet about it. They just start machine gun fighting their way in through people. Griffith finally gets on the PA and speaks to the boys.
"This is Nigel Griffith speaking. Good evening, lads.
I'm a fancy lad extraordinaire."
"Nigel."
"Good evening, lad."
"Not in a conversational mood, are we? Perhaps a word or two from a friend might serve to break the ice."
"I just put a fire extinguisher on your sweet uncle's penis. Hope he'll be able to recover from that." So decides to fake execute Frank, and Moon shoots a gun right next to his head, and Nigel says that one down, a one to go, and Chad picks up the PA to talk back to him and says,
"Griffith, you're dead. You're dead!
Oh my gosh. So Frank is actually still alive, so don't worry. I know you guys are very on the edge of your seat here. So meanwhile, the guy with the knife boots, who I didn't really mention earlier, there's a guy who wears spurs that he uses as knife, so he's somehow a more deadly kicker than Alex is, meets up with him in this dark room, and Alex is able to defeat him because he punches through a wall that lets light in, because all he needed to be able to do was actually see the guy he was fighting. So he quickly dispatches him after that. Moon meets up with Chad for their big rematch, and this whole scene is nothing but Bolo Yang doing fucking presses with giant barrels. It's just
that say flammable on them.
Yeah, that say flammable, right? He just attacks him. He knows karate, but he's just like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna fucking throw barrels like I'm Donkey Kong. And so they both get shirtless. There's lots of barrel throwing. And at one point, he tries to jump kick one back. And he's like, that barrel was too strong. I can't just jump kick barrels. That seems ridiculous. So
can I say one of the greatest things to use in a fight as a weapon?
Yeah.
That's right, a car transmission.
Yeah, car transmission. I was thinking
hell
that
yeah.
Same thing.
Automatic or manual?
Are you trying to steal my bits, Jeremy? I mean, come on.
Just... manual was 91.
That's an old joke from Fistful of Yen, where the guy actually, in a karate fight, uses a car transmission to kill the guy.
Ah.
I stole a joke from a movie.
So after some back and forth and avoiding some barrels, eventually JCVD, who's not only shirtless but somehow has oiled his chest while this has been happening, jump kicks Bolo Yang into an open circuit breaker, which electrocutes him, but not only electrocutes him, also ignites the flammable liquid that is spilled out of the thing, so it completely blows him to fucking smithereens. And Chad luckily narrowly escapes unscathed once again. Nigel and Zhang leave Danielle, who's still tied up downstairs, to basically be sexually assaulted, right? She's just like, we'll be making our way now. Enjoy your rape. And then so they leave this random goon there who's ready to go to town. But luckily, Alex steps in just in time to headbutt this guy with his fucking trusty headbutt move. But all of a sudden, that crazy bitch Kara comes out with her fucking leather pants and starts strangling him from the neck. They go,
from the neck.
Yeah, strangle him in the neck. Who knew? Where else he would strangle him? So, after many jump kicks and avoiding gunfire from both Zhang and Griffith, he basically takes one of her butterfly knives and just stabs her right in the torso. And Kara is now no more. Alex and Chad now are left with a decision to go. One of them goes to go track down Zhang. The other one goes to track down Griffith. So Alex goes after Zhang, who basically climbs like this giant crane type thing, and obviously locks a door behind him. So Alex has to go higher to meet him up there. And in a pretty cool move, Zhang takes out this fucking knife from his cane, tries to stab him, and gets his hand fucking mangled in this giant gear switch like that. So his hand is just completely all just.
Oh, that was so gross. I was like, ugh, ugh.
No.
I was like, ugh. I know it's fake, but I was like, can't see that.
There were some cool shots where, like, clearly his
hand.
There
wasn't a scene as good as that since Terminator 2 when Arnold got his arm stuck in a gear.
Yeah, but it was metal, so it didn't process as much.
Yeah,
with
he didn't
me in
feel
that,
it as a Terminator.
You know? But man, when his I like there's this one scene where Zhang is like laying down after that, and they have like clearly a dummy hand that just looks like it looks like a Gumby figure that you just turned every finger in the wrong direction of, and he's just like, please don't use my strong hand like this. And Zhang offers him half of everything if he'll just let him live. But Alex says, he's like, will you give me back my father? And of course he can't, so Zhang gets tossed off of the top of this thing.
I told hails from your harbor tunnel.
So, kills Zhang. Meanwhile, Chad and Danielle are trying to track down Griffith, and Griffith decides to, you know what? I'm going to use the only thing that I know how to use, a giant sea container claw to fight against this karate guy. So, he forces him off of the dock, and he has to jump into the water, and then he hops out of the claw machine to go shoot wild bullets into just nothing water. You're just shooting into water, which, if you've watched Mythbusters, does absolutely nothing. You can't get shot after you're under like a foot of water. It just dissipates and you can't be penetrated with the bullet anymore.
Maybe he thinks he's like 20 feet down and you just can't see him.
And I like that he's standing there for like a good 90 seconds. He's like, he's got to come up for air. Nobody can hold their breath for 90 seconds. This is ridiculous. So, but by the time he figures out where Alex is, or where Chad is now in the claw machine himself, dangling the giant sea container over his head. And drops it on that guy's head. And
in movie history, is the best death by sea container of any movie ever made.
It is on the Mount. I'd say it's on the Mount Rushmore. I wouldn't put it in one. We'll debate that for a future show when I figure out another person who's died by sea container.
Doesn't like Joe do like corrections or whatever?
Yeah, that will come. He will find a better sea container.
Well,
death
there
scene.
Was a couple other movies where people are killed by sea containers, but
I mean, technically, every time Optimus Prime killed somebody, then that is a sea container murdering somebody. So,
I'll kill you by my sea container.
The movie ends in such a goofy fashion with Alex hugging Danielle, and they have this little embrace, and then it goes back to Chad, and it's just this goofy smile of Jean-Claude Van Damme giving the okay symbol, like, eh-heh! And that's, and then they just roll end credits.
Can we say what that really meant? That was a threesome.
Oh, yeah. He's like, hey, who knows? Maybe I fucked your wife or maybe not. It's no big deal. And it ends with this song that is aptly titled Double Impact right here.
I feel like if you were going to have a threesome, you would want it to be like you're bringing in a third party for a reason. You don't want it to look and sound exactly like the other person that you've been fucking the whole time.
That is true.
My wife always suggests having a threesome just so that the third person can stand there and watch and laugh.
I think that you're that third person, though.
I always...
I think she wants to fuck somebody else while you stand there and watch.
I always...
Well, then it would just be tears and crying.
I keep trying to sell the old lady on a threesome, but she just keeps telling me her boyfriend's going to get fucking pissed. So, whatever.
So one of my ex-boyfriends was always like, yeah, well, you want to... I'm gonna do a threesome and bring another girl into the room. And I remember just being like, okay, I'll do that. If I can have a threesome and bring another guy into the room. And he was like, it's a horrible idea. It's terrible. It's terrible. Right. And I was like, well, sorry, you don't get yours if I'm not getting mine.
I'm with you. Yes.
I'm with you,
Wendy. I want two dudes because I want them both to try and make me happy at the same time, and I know it's not going to happen. So.
I would be into like a two dude situation. I'm not good for sharing. I wouldn't do it in a relationship, but I was like, if you're bringing another girl in, then Mama's getting what she wants from this fucking thing. I'm not.
I think the only thing that really fixes it is a trans man. That's how I would do it.
A lady man.
My only rule is that the dude doesn't stick his fingers in my butt.
What about a girl? Would you let a girl stick her fingers in your butt?
Well, of course.
Fingers are fingers.
Hey, get the vodka enema.
You know me, Jeremy.
Don't get it.
Can I get my shit out of the way and say very thankful to
get your shit out of the way if somebody's putting fingers in your butt.
I want to say thank you to Mac Bergson for sticking up for me on the Robin Joe show because my song was mixed very badly.
That's what I was thinking all the time. I was like,
that's
we don't give Mac Bergson enough love.
It's all your show now, Eric and Wendy and Ash.
All right, thanks, man. We really appreciate you, Jeremy. Just, you know, you just being here and the person that you are, gentleman, scholar, man of so much skin.
The best shrink wrapped employee I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Just mounds and mounds of things on one palette. Just so talented.
You're my little cake batter, baby.
Yeah. I love you, Wendy. If my wife ever dies, I would be going through your garbage every day.
I like that he pretends it's not happening now.
Gotta put up a front. He's on the radio.
Cheese stick wrappers and White Claw cans. There's really nothing cool in my trash.
Hey, to you, it's trash. To me, it's part of my shrine.
Wendy, I know, obviously, our listeners can go and catch you on 98 Rock on every night of the week. But what, you got any cool shows or anything coming up now that COVID is lifted?
Yeah, since we went to phase 3, I started booking shows like crazy. Tonight I'm at Cellar Door, which nobody's going to care because they're not going to hear this in real time.
Yeah.
And then October 3rd, Justin and I are at the Balco Club. And September 30th, Justin and I are at Das Beer Hall. And we have shows booked for December. But
the Balco Club is such a fun room. Thank you for – I got to go there last time when you had a show there, and it was phenomenal. I like that place.
It was great. It was sold out. It was such an amazing show. We had so much fun.
It was one of my last – it was one of my last memories of how the world was before COVID, mm-hmm. and I really loved it.
I know,
it,
right? Like, so. Literally a month later, we were all stuck inside because it was February 8th.
Gosh, the last show I did before the COVID lockdown was a Quiplash show at Ellicott Mills Brewing on the upstairs, and I hate that was the last thing that I did. I feel like, because I had a stacked show. It was like me, Justin, Joe, Tommy, and all that. You know who won the whole tournament? It was one James Finn. James Finn beat all of us.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I just have had to live with that since that. I was like, oh, and now there's a lockdown, no rematch. He's the champion. I couldn't undo that experience at all.
So. I got hired to like guest bartend these like St. Patrick's Day events, and this was when it was at like 200 capacity people, mm-hmm. and then within not even like 4 or 5 days, I like. Was told I don't need to come in to bartend. The restaurants were closed. I couldn't leave my house. I was getting equipment from engineers to work from home, and I was like, what the fuck just happened? Literally everything. And then, I mean, I was getting so, like, my head was going crazy. I booked shows all through the summer. We had, like, Wilson Point Men's Club, and we had shows sold out all through the summer. I couldn't even say yes to people's shows until like September or October, and then all of a sudden COVID happens, and I was just like losing money hand over fist, stuck in my house, going insane. It was just so quick, it happened so fast.
It happens. But listen, things are on the up and up. You got a new ceiling above your bed and a car
hole right now.
So
the problem is the drywall guy was like, I want to make sure it's really dry, like bone dry, before I put new drywall up, because like I don't want it mold. So there's just been I haven't slept in my own bed. There's an air mattress in my spare room that I've been using.
You're not even allowed to play the song Wet Ass Pussy in that room right now. That's how dry he needs it.
When people saw the pictures of my ceiling just falling through all over the place, they're like, oh, what, your sex wing didn't hold up? I was like, okay, great, we get it. We get it. No, seriously. Like, I want more torture. I want all the torture. I just had like the worst 48 hours.
Well, we thank you for coming on the show, and I appreciate it. I hope to see you sooner or later. Any chance I get, it's always a pleasure.
I'm sorry. The last time you saw me, I was in my field.
I know. I've seen you at your worst, and I've seen you at your worst. So I love it, and I never want it to change. I only want up from here.
Can I say as a feminine PSA that I really feel for women that might have to... When they really pee when they come, it might hit the ceiling and actually might destroy their ceiling. So I really feel for women.
That's exactly what no one was thinking, Jeremy. Thank you so much for that. God bless you.
Feel for women, like that's the one you choose.
I don't know.
I'm all for the squirters.
All right, I gotcha. Ashley, where can people find you at, love?
Besides this podcast, you can see me at the Second Saturday Shit Show in Baltimore, Maryland, as long as that is still open. And then I've got a show, I don't remember the venue, September 25th in Lancaster.
All right, check her out. All that shit is coming up. You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Eric with a K, comedy with a C. Check Ashley out at the Second Saturday Shit Show, hosted by Mr. Michael Quinlan and former host of the show, Miss Kimberly Callahan. I got a bunch of shows at Magoobies coming up the next week. You can see The Murder Mystery of the Final Rose coming up on the 19th. Jeremy, take us out.
Fuck it all, I'll swim to L.A.
I say gun, I mean my little penis.